your word, be afraid to say anything. Or you can make them where you allow them to talk and voice their opinions. Or,
and say anything.
Yeah, or say anything. But they need to learn control also. Mm-hmm. So, but I think watching our words to our children is pretty important.
Yeah, and as parents, it's our job to teach them which situation is most appropriate, because there are times when they need to not be afraid to say something.
That's right.
And there are other times when they need to rein it in, because, you know, you can end up in jail, you can end up with a sock in the face, you can end up hurting somebody's feelings badly, you know, especially a child. You can break a spirit, you know, there's so many things that can be done with it.
I've seen parents embarrass their children, sometimes in our pride for them, or in wanting them to be more socially, you know, accepted and everything, we tend to put them in embarrassing situations. And so we have to be careful what we say. And that's what other people do. You know, sometimes we laugh and joke around, and so often in just innocent, like joking around, you can embarrass or hurt someone's feelings. So mm-hmm. You have to think before you.
Right.
Don't
most of us, those at least who are married, don't we learn that pretty early on in the marriage, how to control our tongue around our spouse? We learn pretty quick what's going to embarrass them or hurt their feelings, and that's something we learn. If we don't want the reaction that we often could get, you know, we learn to keep that zipped up. So why can't we learn that with our kids or with other people? You know, just anybody we're talking to. Look back up at verse 19 where it says, in the same chapter, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. The fact that they're, you know, being slow to speak is grouped with swift to hear. You know, if you're listening instead of talking, that's going to help right there, number one. Be sure you're listening. So, and I know that's down here further down the list. The wrath, slow to wrath does not produce righteousness, you know. You know, in the list with those two things, you know, I think that shows its importance. Anything else on this before we go to Proverbs 10?
Well, we need to know our words come from our heart. And
yes.
So we're showing our heart to other people by the way we talk. And
What can our words show coming out of our heart, or the condition of our heart? What can we reveal about our hearts by our words?
Whether we're trying to live like God wants us to.
Yeah.
Whether we put Him first over others.
Okay. We can show bitterness.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
What do you think?
You can show bitterness by your words, and you may not even realize that you're bitter, or we may not even realize that we're bitter about things, you know, but other people can tell by our words. Maybe sometimes more than our actions. Actions, you know, you say actions speak louder than words, and in a lot of cases they do, but words reveal a lot of things about what kind of heart we have, and what our heart dwells on, what we think is important, you know, what we think is not important. So, okay, Proverbs 10:19. Linda, will you read that, please?
Proverbs 10:19.
Yes, ma'am.
When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable, but he who restrains his lips is wise.
Okay, so James 1:26 talks about bridling our tongue, and this says that he who does that is what?
Wise.
You know how Proverbs is written, but with parallelism, and I think it's interesting that, and this is the opposite kind, I can't think of the right word right now, but in the multitude of words, and then he who restrains his lips are opposites, and then sin is not lacking, and then is wise are opposites. So, I mean, that verse kind of sums everything up completely about how, you know, if all we do is talk, And we don't ever listen, then we're showing, there's another verse that even says this more clearly, we'll get to in a minute. We're showing, you know, whether we're wise or whether we're sinful. It's interesting to me that being wise is compared to being sinful, because just too many words is going to get us into trouble. And some verses I think say transgression, but I've got New King James and it says sin. Flip over to
21:23.
Verse 20 is talking about the value of either righteousness or worth little, the value of the words coming out or the tongue, whether you're righteous or wicked. And man, I can't believe I missed those two verses. I should have had that down too. You can add that to your sheet. Thanks, Linda. Okay, Proverbs 21:23. Megan, will you read that one, please?
He who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from troubles.
Okay, guard goes back to bridle, you know, curb or restrain or harness, you know, keep a rein on it. You know, if you just turn a horse loose with no bit, or, you know, or bridle, what's it going to do? If it's not broken anyway, it's just going to run off. And what can a ship do without a rudder to guide it? How are you going to drive a ship without a rudder? It's not doable. So you've got to use it in a way that makes its what it's controlling useful and usable and keeps you out of trouble. The solution to this problem is guarding your tongue. Does that mean you shut up completely?
Just be careful what you say.
Exactly. Just, you know, give it thought. You know, think before you speak. Just think about it before it comes out. 17:27 is backing up a little bit. Sally, can you read that one, please? Actually, read 27 and 28, please.
He that hath knowledge spareth his words, and a man of understanding is of an excellent spirit. Even a fool, when he holdeth his peace, is counted wise. And he that shutteth his lips is esteemed a man of understanding.
Okay, so if a fool is counted wise because he keeps his mouth shut, somebody that's known as a fool, when he keeps his mouth shut in a certain situation, it's going to be a surprising situation, right? Because if he's considered to be perceptive, if he keeps his mouth shut, because that is the way people think of people who are wise. You know, they guard their tongues. They're not just overflowing with excess words. The New American Standard and NIV say restraint here instead of Okay, which word is that instead of? I have restraint can help avoid heated exchanges and overreactions. Oh, instead of spares. When the other versions have spares, King James, American Standard, and New King James say he who spares his words, and the other two, who restrains his words. So it doesn't say don't talk. It doesn't say don't talk. It just says keep it under control. Yeah, be careful. Keep it. Right. Use some judgment. Use some perception. And it also slows down the process of, you know, conversation or whatever, so you can hear the other person. How many of us have ever had a conversation with somebody where you're talking about something and you can tell that the other person is not listening? Their mind is working on the answer to what you're saying or what you've already said. They're working ahead, and they're really not paying attention to what you're saying because their thought processes are ahead of you, trying to, you know, come up with a comeback. And by the way, when it says shut his lips in verse 28, y'all that had New American Standard, so that says he's considered prudent. What does prudent mean? It's not exactly the same as perceptive.
Well, then, isn't it synonymous with considered wise in that?
Yeah, I think it's using wisdom and using judgment, using good judgment. So, but then let's turn over to 18:13. You don't have to turn very far.
You know, sometimes when we're doing this and we're in a disagreement with someone, or there has been discussion about stuff, and this is especially in marriages and everything, it's just better not. And although you want to prove your point, keep on with it and everything like that, there comes a time when it's better just not to say anymore.
I had a conversation yesterday with somebody who was talking about, you know, her husband's got this 20-year-old pickup that they've been married 5 years, and he's got this 20-year-old pickup that she's convinced that he's had repainted 3 times. And she just thinks that's ridiculous. But she says, you know, what's the point in arguing about it? That's his baby. That's his thing. And I said to her, I said, wouldn't it be nice if people who were in their 20s and first got married had that kind of wisdom? You know, how much better off would marriages be? Because they don't, do they? We have to prove our point. That's ridiculous. You don't need to spend that money on that. And you have to argue about it. I mean, she got married at 59 for the first time. So that's, she said, you know, it's whatever he wants to do. How often are we like that in our marriages or our relationships with other people? Whatever, you know, whatever you say. I think I told y'all before about a preacher's wife telling my sister that, you know, if you're having an argument with somebody, it's sometimes better to just say, I'm sure you're right, or you could be right. You know, rather, even if you don't think you're right, you know, you just diffuse the thing. Just stop it. And then in chapter 18:13 is pretty much the same thing. He who answers a matter that I mentioned a minute ago, I mean, he who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. So if we're not listening and we just start talking without even having heard what the other person says, how much trouble does that cause in a marriage? Because we think we know the answer already. You know, we just start spitting it out when we hadn't even really heard what they're saying. So that's pretty. It's too easy to misinterpret or misread what's happening or what they're saying. We don't always know what they're going to say, and when we're planning ahead, we don't hear it. And so we need to listen first, then think about what we're going to say. Or if you can think and listen at the same time, that's good. But can most people do that? Not really. I mean, there's such a thing as multitasking. I know that, and some people are better at that than others, but. It's just too easy to be thinking about what I'm going to say next rather than hearing what they're actually saying.
Can you imagine the God of the universe saying, you ought to be ashamed of yourself? You're just acting foolish. And that's exactly what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. It is.
We don't want to hear
right.
that.
Yeah. It's amazing how, you know, we get it in our heads that we think we're right. I don't know why we have to be right. And, you know, I know some personalities aren't that way. Some personalities don't care and are happy to let the other person be right. They don't even care. Even if they think they're wrong, they just don't care enough to argue about it. I wish I was one of those. I'm not. Okay, let's go to Job 2, verse 13. Elizabeth, will you read this one?
Then they sat down on the ground with him for 7 days and 7 nights with no one speaking a word to him, for they saw that his pain was very great.
Okay, so this is talking about Job and his three friends, and obviously, I guess the young guy, you know, that spoke last. Why do I have this verse on here? They didn't say anything. For how many days?
Seven
days. And what do you suppose was the purpose of that? Or even the outcome? What were they trying to do by sitting there with him?
Just to give him comfort.
And there really wasn't much they could say. I mean, even though they managed to say plenty eventually. But for 7 whole days, they restrained themselves. And just that act gave Job comfort. I mean, he knew good and well there wasn't anything they could do or say that was going to make a difference. He knew he hadn't done anything wrong. They started out, I think, thinking that way, but then they started saying, you know, just repent and get this over with. Sometimes it's just better to say nothing at all. And sometimes just our presence can be a comfort or bring peace to people, bring some a mercy, you know, just have you there and not say anything. The trick is to know when those times are, you know, when it's better to not say anything. Just sit there with somebody. And we've all sat with somebody in the hospital who's gravely ill or dying, and, you know, there's nothing to be said. But you can tell by the way the patient, the person responds that it's a help to them. We are all aware of that. Sometimes it's hard to do. I think it's probably always hard to do, especially if you know they're not going to make it. They're not going to survive. Anything before we go to Philippians 2?
I think it's interesting that in this scenario with his friends and everything, at this point, God didn't tell Job to offer sacrifices for them, you know. But whatever they got through spilling all that nonsense that they thought was knowledge and what they thought they knew, you know. And
they should have just stuck with their first instinct, shouldn't they? I didn't remember reading that before. I mean, how many times have I read Job? I've plenty. But I didn't remember that they had sat there in silence for 7 days before they started uttering all their baloney.
And I don't know if 7 days is 7 days. You know how this kind of thing is.
But however long it is, they sat there for a while in silence. So, that, you know, that's what the interesting part is. Okay, let's go to Philippians 2:3. This chapter is about Christ, humbling himself and how we're supposed to follow that example and esteem others better than ourselves. So, but verse 3, Sandra, will you read it, please?
That's chapter 1. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself.
Okay, so what did you put, what kind of notes did you make on this about how this can be applied to restraining or controlling our tongue?
I found a note about conceit that says it can sometimes mean empty pride, or sometimes it can mean groundless self-esteem.
Okay.
And I found it interesting also, lowliness of mind, you know, the whole thing about humility, what we're studying. And
that is
talking about true humility here.
Right. Okay, so how can we apply that to the tongue, or to holding the tongue?
Well, you know, sometimes we're looking for our own glory, and we're looking, and it's out of rivalry, and sometimes we bring the other person down or make comments or speak in a way to, you know, to make them feel less instead of building them up, you know, and it talks about valuing others, you know, more than yourself.
Exactly. Take the focus off myself because I have something to say, and put the focus on that other person and put them first, and, you know, give thought, as Sally says, just think about what you're going to say. What I have to say, is it all that important? Do I really need to say it? Is it going to benefit anybody? You know, why do I have to say anything? If we apply this to ourselves as far as putting the other person first, why do I think so highly of my thoughts and words? Why in the world do I think they want to hear them? Now, if somebody comes to you for advice, that's different. You know, they want to know what you think. They want to know if you can help them that way. You know, if you're asked, that's one thing. But just don't overwhelm them with what, but I think this and I think that, and you ought to do this and you ought to do that. If you put them first and listen, sometimes they can talk themselves right into a solution. You know, they don't even have to. If you think, obviously, that's if they're asked. But what if it's an unsolicited opinion? Why do I think it's so important that somebody hear that? It comes back to me. You know, if I had the humility in my heart that I should have, this stuff isn't going to be so important to me that I think others need to hear it. I don't have that much importance to say. I don't really. Do I have all the answers? Do I really have all the answers? I might have one. But do I have them all? No, nobody's ever going to have all the answers. But sometimes we think we do. Listen, that happened to me one time, and let me tell you what I did, and it fixed it. Have you ever heard that? You know, just if they would ask for you for it, that's one thing. But unsolicited, you know, they may not really want your input. Sometimes they just want to talk. Any other notes that anybody made or comments you have? You know, this verse obviously applies to not just our tongue, but anything we do or say or think. You know, we're here to serve. And can we actually be a servant if we don't have humility? Because that, when you're serving, you're putting the other person first. You know, you're making sacrifice, say, with your time, with your money, with your groceries, with your belongings. Say somebody needs something and you give it to them. You know, that they need it more than you do. You know, if we can put ourselves after the person, the other person, or persons, you know, our brethren or our family, you know, a mother, her job is mostly sacrificial. You know, the mother's all about, and the wife really is all about keeping the house and keeping everybody fed and clothed and where they need to be. You know, that's a lot of mothers don't have much me time, do they? Especially when their kids are little. But you know, once we're past that stage, you know, it's sometimes it's easy to forget, you know, when we're all free and we're like, oh, you know, I'm all independent now. I don't have to do anything for anybody ever again. Is that what a Christian should do?
Sometimes as a mother, it's hard not to say something to your children when you think,
leave me alone.
It's better.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, if you got to teach them. Sometimes they have to learn by trial and error and by making their own mistakes. You're right.
A lot of it is nurturing, and I find that kids might be fed and clothed and in all sports and, you know, ripped everywhere and given money, but as far as real nurturing and real connection, it's not there.
Are you talking about as far as spiritual teaching or as far as just a mother-child relationship?
All of it.
All of it. You're right. Sometimes we just get caught up in the busyness of everyday stuff and we don't have time for our kids. You know, that comes into this verse too. You know, put our kids above ourselves and make sure that they're getting what they need. If they don't get it at home, where are they going to get it?
If we're doing it spiritually, they are getting it.
You're right. You're right.
But yeah.
And that is a huge form of nurturing right there. They're going to see it.
But it takes time to listen. Sometimes kids are slow. I had one that if I wasn't there, the minute she hit the front door and heard the spew, you know, what went on that day.
It was gone.
It was gone. The other one, you had to drag it out of it. Hmm. You know, I mean, it was just, you just had to be there. You had to look at the signs and get into the conversation, you know, and then listen. Because the kids need to talk, but you need to take time to listen. Instead of jumping, just like we do, we jump ahead about three blocks,
mm-hmm.
you know, and solve it. And that's not what they're looking for.
That's right. That's not what they need.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, I've read a lot of stuff about husbands and wives. Wives, say they have issues or problems and they want to talk to the husband. And the husband is kind of built to want to jump in and fix it all. And when most of the time the wife just wants somebody to listen to them. Just hear me out. I don't need you to fix it. I just want you to know what's going on. And, you know, I know that causes some friction in some marriages, but that's also very true with children. We have to give them the tools so they can learn how to solve things on their own. All right. How would holding my tongue make me more humble?
Well, it makes you more willing to listen to what the other person has to say, and not, like you said, thinking of answers way ahead. You know, you have to listen with the heart.
That's true. Sometimes that's kind of hard, isn't it? Sometimes some people just never stop talking. You know, those are the really hard ones for me anyway to sit and listen to, because they, you know, there's never a gap. You know, you can't take a breath. But, you know, a lot of people are like that. People are different. We've got to learn to make sure our tongue knows when to be silent and when to not be silent. I don't think it just comes naturally. I think it's something we have to work on. We're showing them honor, I think, by listening to them. And when we're listening to them, that shows them that we care about what they have to say. We care about what they think, about how they feel about things. If we're just tossing out our own answers and our own solutions, that I think that takes away from giving them the feeling of being cared about, to be valued as a human being or as a friend or as a brother or a sister in Christ. Susan, were you going to say something?
I was thinking about sometimes, people just want to talk and not necessarily they don't have a problem or anything else. Maybe they just,
You're talking about venting about an issue? Or?
No, I mean, I think it's just...
Just visit?
You live by yourself.
Yeah.
You don't have a dog or a cat. And you just, sometimes you just want to talk and... It doesn't mean anything needs to be said on the other side. It's just listening. Sometimes that helps too.
Absolutely. I agree. Several of us in here live by ourselves.
I talk to myself all the
time. I'm sorry?
I talk to myself all the time.
Well, I guess I used to talk to myself. I talk to my dog now. It's funny how you talk to a dog. They're real good listeners.
I put down 2 Corinthians 12:20 because it's talking about it doesn't have the word humble in it and everything, but Paul, of course, in his writing to the Corinthian church, I mean, he's really getting on her case. And of course, he's been defending his apostleship. But he's talking about coming again. And he says, when I come again, I may find you not to be what I wish, and may be found by you to be what you want. Be not what you wish, that perhaps there be strife, jealousies, anger, tempers, disputes, slanders, gossip, arrogance, disturbances, and all those kinds of things. And of course, that has got the tongue right in the middle, with all of that, and selfishness, and being self-absorbed, and not being humble and thinking about other people, but their own agenda.
I don't know that this is ever really addressed in the Bible, but, sometimes we don't have to say anything and our face says it all. So, I mean, I don't know if you consider that the tongue, but, we got to learn to school our faces, too.
Isn't that with Cain? God saw his
house? Yeah. And even Adam and Eve, he saw them in their garments, but he knew something was wrong as soon as he saw them. He knew they had done something wrong. Well, he knew it anyway, but... okay, any other comments on this? Okay, then next week we will do take the lowest place. This is a lesson that obviously it's mentioned multiple times in the Bible. It's not something that most of us that really applies to. We don't go to banquets where there's kings or presidents or weddings where you've got, the higher social ranking people sit certain places. Now, at a wedding, where would be the highest place at a wedding? Would we march up and sit at the head table? Who's going to be at the head table? The bride and the groom, generally, maybe some of the family. But we know how to act in that situation. But sometimes it's not an actual physical walking in and sitting in the better place. It's an attitude thing. So we'll talk about that next week. Okay. We already mentioned